Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with the internationally renowned leader and executive, Stéphane Boisvert, President, Bell Canada Enterprise Group. Stéphane, thank you for coming in today to share your deep insights with the audience.
Thanks, Stephen.
Stéphane, we can learn a lot from your long history of successes. Can you profile how you got to your present position and what your current role entails?
So let's talk with my current role. I manage a multi-billion dollar business for Bell, which is basically a business segment of Bell Canada, where we look after being a service provider to the public sector and the private sector organization across the country, so nationwide. I was fortunate in my past over 20 years of being in a business to work at IBM in the Canadian market, but as well in the U.S. and worldwide. And later on, was able to be approached to run the Sun Microsystem of Canada business in 2002 as the president. And then after moved to California and became the second in command for worldwide sales for all the technical professional services side of Sun Microsystem Worldwide, or Inc., for their business around the world and based in California. So I was commuting from California. And then in 2006, I was fortunate to be approached and being asked to lead this wonderful organization called Bell Enterprise at Bell Canada.
What opportunities will you realize for Bell in the short and longer term?
On a short-term basis, Stephen, we are in the business of, first and foremost, as a service provider to deliver high-power networks. So what does it mean is that in creating a value prop to our customer, they need to understand the capabilities behind the IP protocol and in ways for them to kind of redesign the communication between their suppliers, their partners, Their customer, and from a public sector perspective with their citizens. And on a short-term basis, really to wrap around a strong value prop to our customer to fully understand what they could do today and in the future with high-power networks that we have at Bell Canada Enterprise. On a long-term basis is to really sum up in aggregate all the value creation we've done through delivering those solutions to our customers and really being a stronger and a growing asset for Bell Enterprise for the Bell Canada family of businesses. And it's a combination of maintaining and sustaining high customer satisfaction and running a very profitable business.
Please provide your forecast of the top technology trends and what are their opportunities for business.
I think we're getting more and more in a world of true connectivity. You know, being connected, you know, at home, through work, without being kind of limited by physical networks is absolutely key. And when we get into the concept on a short-term basis of fixed mobile convergence, which is, you know, your mobile capabilities with your basic cell phone and then what you could have fixed at home or at the office, is being able to merge those two capabilities is absolutely key. And we're seeing more and more solutions being able to do that now. In the future, I think everything's going to be seamless and there will be absolutely no border in terms of making true connection, not just voice connection, but being able to exchange data, any data type at a very fast rate with top shelf network capability.
You've had an incredible history, so what leadership, career tips, and lessons can you share from your rich experiences?
Well, I think the most important one is to be yourself. And what I mean by that is what I realized I would say a number of years ago is that by really leveraging leadership attributes that are for me the key ones are passion for the business, decisiveness, straight talk, leveraging organization capabilities, personal management are the key ones that really define you as a person and really help you being successful across your career. What I do realize as well is that always being being in an uncomfortable environment, so you really stretch yourself. I think that routine and being in too much of a comfort zone really diminishes your capabilities over time. So you know, it's really stretching yourself, and I feel that from a career standpoint, first you have to manage your own career. I told many individuals in the past that I did mentor that, you know, you don't let the organization managing your career. You have to look after yourself. And I'm not saying that the egoistic manner. I'm saying that in a true manner, that if you have an agreement between yourself and the organization in terms of what you should be delivering in terms of KPIs or objectives, as you meet these specific targets, there should be have a clear contract between you and the organization about, you know, the next steps and what you should look into as the next step in your career, and that is actually key. This is how everything that I just mentioned served me well in my past 20 year in the business.
What are your lessons for managing change within an organization?
So, you know, I moved from different cultures to Sun and to Bell. One thing that you have to first and foremost, it's absolutely key, is to acknowledge the foundation, which is, you know, years in business of the company you're joining, and acknowledge in such a way that they've been successful. They have created customer relationships. They are truly, you know, when we look at the multi-billion dollar business, you know you are coming as an agent of change, there's no doubt. But if you don't spend time acknowledging the foundation, acknowledging the culture, and then, you know, get into a true active listening, this is when you've done the, when you cover those bases, you're really in a position to, you know, get into making the changes. And then quickly you make part of the DNA of the organization the notion that because of competition and the landscape and economic factors and market dynamics, you'll be facing a number of changes over time no matter what. So, you know, it's basically being able to have an organization that has the muscle structure to embrace change on an ongoing basis. And it's not, I believe that change is not a month during the year, a week during the month. It is a constant state of running your business. And this is what I've been applying myself to explain to my management team and to the organization that I ran in the past so many years.
How does one become the leader or manager that everyone wants to work for?
That's a very good question, Stephen. I think that first and foremost, individual wants to be part of a winning team. People that, you know, a team that solve issues, that gets customer satisfaction, very good customer satisfaction, and as well, you know, is very rewarding. And as a leader, what I find is I could tackle the performance, you know, part of the performance and making sure that we are winning in the marketplace. We are delivering on our commitments. And we are making, you know, some good money as individuals in terms of having a very strong reward system. That combination of those three elements makes an environment that, as a leader, first people want to be part of that winning team. And if they were successful being part of that winning team, as a leader move to another, running another business or another organization, you know, people are attracted to be part of winning teams. And that is part of human nature. And, unless that, you know, someone that wants to thrive on success, which is always possible, you want to be part of that team. And the leadership style and the leadership person that move to team to team, different teams, will always attract talent during the journey of moving to a team and rebuilding another winning organization.
Can you share some stories from your experiences?
Yes, the most drastic one is coming to Sun Microsystems Canada in 2002. Basically, it was an organization that was dead last in the ranking of the different geographies at Sun. You know, you're number 14 out of 14, so it gives you a sense of where we were. And really rebuilding the entire team and became a very successful team, number one geographies by 2005. And what I did find out is as I moved to California, a number of folks that are and were in the Sun Microsystems of Canada organization wanted to follow me. And I would say that after I've done my work in California and moving to Bell, I've got a strong set of followers that wants to work with me based on the building a winning team, a great spirit, and having a very strong reward system.
You recently took on a great challenge involving addressing the IT skills gap. What do you see as the IT skills challenge?
I think the fundamental issue that one should expose to the marketplace, both to the private sector and the public sector, is there's a complete disconnect between supply and demand. And what people don't, what we are in the midst of realizing here and understand is that we have a crisis, a looming crisis in the future, not too far from now. In about 3 years, we might be short 90,000 individual to fill IT jobs, and that has a huge impact on the GDP, roughly of $10 billion. So the skill challenge is that since it takes time to educate someone, you always have a rolling window of three to 4 years and to 5 years, and depending on the job type, you need to address today that challenge in terms of meeting the demand of tomorrow. Otherwise, you know, we're going to have an impact on the Canadian productivity.
So you've sort of talked about this already, but what kinds of skill shortages do you see?
Well, you know, the thing that needs to be communicated to the marketplace, and we've been doing that for a while now, is that, you know, there's the negative press on outsourcing and move and jobs that move abroad to India and to other emerging markets, which is all fine, and it's part of being a global business. But I think that is not well explained to the youth and the students and the market is that most of these job types were low-skill IT jobs. And one thing that we have to address and communicate and educate the market is that there's a ton of jobs already available for high-skilled individual with IT background. And this is where we need to kind of shed the light on how much, what's the salary, how do we perform, what kind of interesting job and job prospect we have in the marketplace, and how do we align talent to these jobs. So that the shortage is high-skilled talent, and the market because of you know, an example, Bill C-130 that talks about, you know, data management in country, which is similar to the Patriot Act in the U.S., United States, is you've got this notion that we need to have in-country management of our data and have strong data privacy and data security function in place within the country. So those require high-skilled IT individual in all cases.
So what is the scale of the IT skills program or
well,
problem?
As I said earlier, if you do the basic math, and look at retirement or retirees, projected retirees in 3 years from now, lack of interest, there's a looming 90,000 shortfall in terms of missing individuals to fill jobs in about 3 to 5 years, which has a significant economic impact of $10 billion at the GDP level.
So what are the contributing key factors?
So if we go back in time, I think that one, there's a number of them, but the key interesting one, or one, is the tech bubble and burst, and creating an environment at the family level where, you know, some of the family and some of the parents might have lost money on technology stock. So that creates a negative environment within the family in terms of letting a children look at jobs in the IT market. So there's a bit of negative press or effect or impact at that level. And as well, which is the other, I would say, factor, is a lot of media and press on outsourcing and making making that an issue that so many jobs are moving to emerging markets, and then creating kind of an interesting and create an environment such that people feel that students feel that there will be no future in IT. What's interesting is that meanwhile there's a vacuum that is being created by, you know, a growing desire in the Canadian market to be more productive, and when you want to be more productive, you need to invest in system and application that needs IT skills. So I would say the tech burst and the press around outsourcing IT talent abroad are the contributing factors.
So what are we putting at risk?
Oh, I think national productivity is a key concern from a Canadian standpoint. Investing in system and key technology improve our level of productivity. You know, just 1% of improvement in productivity at the Canadian level has a economic factor of $14,000 per habitant in the Canadian marketplace. So I think this is absolutely huge from a pure economic standpoint.
Is this a global problem, and can you provide examples?
I think it is. What's interesting is some of countries who were facing that issue in the past really took the bull by the horn. Ireland did a massive analysis of supply and demand, and the government working with the with academia, with universities and colleges, came up with a pure analysis of how many students and how many students should be finishing with degrees in IT, computer science, engineering degree, to meet the market demand. Because the government was investing from a tax program incentive perspective massively to attract the top technology provider like the Microsoft, Intel. So you cannot attract companies and then, you know, put yourself at risk because you don't have any talent there to supply to the employment required to have these companies in place. Germany did the same. They decided to look at demand and supply and do two things, really push hard that people get an IT education at the academic level, and as well attracted through immigration program workers from abroad with the right background for them to meet their requirement in terms of job requirements and their needs in their own country. And I would finish with the United States. They have a massive countrywide program called the 21st Century, Office of Productivity Initiative that looks after maintaining and keeping IT talent in the United States. So other were facing it, and they took action.
So what are the solutions here?
Well, the solution here is to really sit down first, create an environment there where there's more open communication between the marketplace, so the market, which are industries and the universities and colleges, to understand what is required in the future, and do a basic economic analysis on what's required and what we should have and when we should have it in terms of IT talent, and plan for it. It's very basic. No one has done it. And I think that it's now the time. We could map the issue through the notion that, you know, enrollment is up across the country. But if you look in detail at certain programs, it's quite alarming. Some of the programs that touch the IT market are declining by a factor of 70%. So that is a major red flag. So the solution is to really, and this is what the coalition is doing, is to really go, you know, look at this grassroots problem of understanding what's required in the market in terms of jobs and what is the pipeline in university, and really synchronize the current, you know, education sector to, you know, the industry requirements and demands.
Well, tell us more now about the Canadian Coalition for Tomorrow's ICT Skills, which Dell founded, and what your goals are.
So we did found this coalition, and that happened just because I felt as a leader that, and I sense as a leader that we were facing a looming crisis, and we decided at Dell Enterprise to commission a survey through their conference board just to get a sense of if there is an issue, a looming issue in terms of a potential IT talent crisis, and unfortunately we quickly find out that there is one. That document and survey was shared with the industry, or cross-industry, with our top clients. And that really drive a desire to form the coalition and attack the issue. You could always have your own set of programs within one enterprise, but if you don't attack the issue on a countrywide basis, and you just chase the talent on a individual basis, you create inflation. And this is one thing you want to avoid from a economy standpoint. So we are rallying the industry plus subject matter experts and as well a large number of universities and institutions across the country to help us solve the issue. And the goal is basically there's three objectives. And the number one is to first, and they're very basic, but I think they are core to solve the challenge. The number one objective is to raise the profile of ICT and ICT career choices among young people. That is key in terms of building the pipeline for having enough, you know, talent in the marketplace to fill the jobs. Second is to raise public awareness of the importance of ICT to Canada. And there's a number of efforts there to really understand that, you know, if we don't have the right talent in place, working in the information communication technology space in our country, that will have a dramatic impact on our productivity and on our living standards. And finally, the third one is to develop government immigration policies that answers companies' present and future needs. And the reason why we are tackling this one is because, you know, the education market cohort, that takes time. That takes 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. So we're looking at, this objective looks at more short-term, medium-term initiatives to fill up the current lack of talent we have in the marketplace. So those are the three objectives.
So we're at the very end of this interview, and I'd like to now give you time to comment on any topics of your choosing. And for example, if you were going to ask three questions, what three questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
I was thinking about potentially three questions. And let me try this one to start with. One thing that I get all the time about you know, pushing this platform of an IT skill issue. As a telco company, we're still seen as a good old phone guys. And what's really creating a challenge for us, and we're trying to address it very hard, is how do we change that perception? Because if we want to be the leader and the engine behind a coalition, we have to make sure that we're not just a company that, you know, sell phone and connectivity. So the answer to that is that, again, it's communication, is to make sure that we're not a plain old telco company, that we are a concerned corporate citizen from an enterprise standpoint, and, you know, there's lots we could do with our customer. And having a spokesperson out of this business talks about all the goods we're doing at Bell Enterprise. The second question, that leads into the change, managing change topic that you touch on, is that, you know, what are the material change or material behavior change you're seeing after, you know, embracing change? And, you know, one thing that, you know, I would answer to that question would be that since I joined this business, we did attract new talent. We don't have any issue attracting talent. Some young blood, some people that really want to make a difference. Just the notion that, you know, people want to join Bell Enterprise now is a good sign that, you know, we are a great business to work for and work with. And that is, for me, a yardstick to see if we are able to have material impact in terms of changing our organization from an internal and external standpoint. And the final question that came to mind is one in terms of leadership. And since I have a key position in the Canadian market, running a multi-billion dollar business, which is, you know, in a Canadian space is quite significant, you know, should you play a role as a leader to make the country better? And I think this is absolutely key. You know, I think that when I look at the coalition, I felt as a business leader that, you know, we need to solve that issue. And I think that anyone else that is facing an issue that could have an economic impact to the country need to really get involved, attract other business leaders and solve as a team the issue or the challenge to make the country better. I think that we're a small country in terms of population and size of our economy, and if we are too individualistic in our approach, that doesn't really create growth on a global basis, and that is absolutely key and needs to be understood for all the leaders out there trying to make their business better, their organization grow faster, but as well take into account that Canada should be, the Canadian economy is as well, you know, a key factor for their prosperity in the future.
Stefan, your vision and your leadership resonate with the world and also with our country. And I want to thank you for taking the time to share your valued accumulated wisdom and deep insights with the audience. And we will continue to follow your innovative leadership work with keen interest.
Thank you very much, Stephen.